Our scripture for today is from 1 Corinthians 2, 1 through 5. And I, when I came to you, brothers, did not come proclaiming to you the testimony of God with lofty speech or wisdom, for I decided to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. I was with you in weakness and in fear and much trembling, and my speech and my message were not in plausible words of wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power, so that your faith might not rest in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. This is God's holy word. You may be seated.
Thank you. Well, I thought he's taking the mic from me already. You know, he's not going to take the day off. But hey, thank you so much for allowing me to be here. And it's so good to be with Jared and your church. I know so much about it because of Clark and Helen. And we're so grateful for how you already invest in missions and make yourself much larger beyond these walls. And I just want to say thank you for that. I'm going to share off the passage that Pfeiffer just read and Acts 18, 9 and 10. I know you just finished a series in Acts last month. I want to go back and correct some of the things that Jared messed up. And so in Acts 18, verse 9 and 10, we'll get there in just a moment. But I'd like to, if I can, introduce my family real fast. They're not actually able to be here because there's so many of them, but it helps me kind of transition into what I'm talking about. I'll throw a picture up there just real fast. You got that picture there? There we go. I'll do it real fast. Trust me. My wife's to the right there, Lynette. She's actually in Israel today, in Jerusalem. And so it's crazy to look on Find Your Friends and see your friend at Sea of Galilee. You know, it's really crazy. But then we have six kids. Our oldest two daughters are in the middle, and they each have three children. There's only four in the picture. Two of them aren't that cute, so we left them out. And then I'm just joking. They were just born, so we haven't updated the picture. We updated every Thanksgiving. And then our oldest son is Taylor on the far right. He's in California working on his master's, finishes in August. And then God blesses with a second phase of kids. So we had three biological, and then we began to adopt. And Libby is the very first one we adopted. She's back there by Lynette. She's from Asia, and we got her when she was one, and she just turned 18 a few weeks ago. And they found Libby in a shoebox outside of a police station, and we were able to get her when she was one. So she's an incredible blessing. And then the second child we adopted is Michael Lynn. She's midway to the middle there. She's from Ethiopia. We adopted her when she's three, and she's now 15. And she's pretty... Libby is very shy and to herself. Michael Lynn is not. And so her gift is bossiness, we often say. If you ever watch Sanford and Son, you ever see that show? Well, we adopted Aunt Esther, all right? And so she went into our neighbor's house when we first got here and put her hand on her hip and said, you people have issues. And then she was just five. And they're like, do what? She says, your house is a mess. You have issues. So we had to set her down. We just moved here from Louisville, Kentucky. We're trying to make friends. And we said, look, sweetheart, we're trying to make friends, and you're not helping, all right? So, and then J.M., John Michael, but he goes by J.M. on the far left. He's from the Philippines. And we adopted J.M. when he was 12, and he's now 20. And so we have six kids from four different countries. It's real funny. You can go ahead and take that off if you want. I get distracted really easy. And I'm so glad those shades are pulled. I was in Montana the other day, and the shades were open, and it was like, there goes a bird. I was just so easily distracted. It's terrible. But we have six kids from four different countries, and typically when I'm in the South, they'll go, well, bless your heart, you know? And I know what that means. That means better you than me. That's what that means. And but I often tell folks, there's no need to bless my heart. I'm just very competitive. And what I mean is we have six kids from four different countries. When we watch the Olympics, we win, all right? We do. There's an interesting story about when I went to pick up JM. I always love to tell this because it relates to church planning, believe it or not. But we went to pick up JM. As I said, he was 12, and they had taught him some rough English. And but they said, look, be very careful with him when you take him back to the hotel because he's not used to some of the same luxuries you're used to back in the States. And I went, luxuries? He got us confused with somebody. What are you talking about? They said, no, hot water. He's not used to hot water. We found him. They found him when he was five, wandering the streets, picking up plastic bottles, and took him back to the orphanage, and he was there from five until 12. and they didn't have hot water at the orphanage. They have it in Manila, but not in this orphanage, and basically took sink baths for all those years. He said, it's no big deal. He just don't want him to harm himself, so when you get back there, make sure to help him understand hot water. And so I said, okay, so we go back to the hotel. You can only imagine, he's been in the orphanage for 7 years. He's 12 years old, knows rough English, and I'm letting him bounce on the beds and do those things you do in a hotel room your first time there. And then it came time for bath time, and I said, James, come here, buddy, I want to show you something. So I took him into the bathroom, and I turned the water on lukewarm, and then I took his hand and put his hand underneath the water, and then I just gradually turned the water warmer and warmer and warmer until he began to feel hot water for the very first time. And I'll never forget the look in those big brown Filipino eyes when he said, that is wonderful. And I said, it is wonderful. You're going to love it. Now I'm going to go in there. You take off your clothes and hop in the shower. And I wasn't thinking. You know, a lot of things don't translate, and he didn't have a shower. He says, shower? What's a shower? And so I had to explain a shower to him. You ever explain a shower to somebody? It's not that easy. You know, it's like it's water from heaven. You're going to love it. And so it's harder than you think. And it's just some things you don't think about because it's like the first time we went out to eat. First time we went out to eat with him, he'd not been out to eat. We take those things for granted. We're spoiled people. And we took him out to eat, and he didn't know what to do. There were so many choices. He says, no sweat, buddy. I'll order for you. I said, just bring him chicken fingers. He's like, no! I'll not eat chicken fingers. I said, no. It's not chicken fingers. That's just what they call them. And he said, well, why do they call them that? And I said, I don't know. Just dip them in barbecue sauce, all right? You can only imagine the time we had buffalo wings. You know what I mean? Just took forever. But finally, we were able to, he took that shower and come out smelling really good 45 minutes later, all shriveled up. And, you know, he's never forgotten the blessing of hot water. You know, it made me think that night when I went to bed on my cot next to his bed thinking, you know, how many 12-year-olds are that excited about hot water? I forget 12 years. How many of us are? I mean, we're just spoiled people, you know? Sir, Michigan sweatshirt. I'm sorry to wake you up. Hey, what was your first name?
Jim.
Jim, I picked you because you look like the cleanest guy in this section. All right. Now, Jim, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to be honest with me, all right? We're talking about hot water and all those things and being, we're basically very spoiled people. But, Jim, you've taken a shower in the last 3 days? All right, we're all excited, especially those folks. And Jim, be honest with me, though. When you felt that hot water, did you go like, yes, hot water? Did you do that? Jim, just answer the question, all right. Look in the bulletin. I'm preaching today, not you, all right. Did you do that, Jim? You didn't do that. You see, Jim, Jim, he's what's wrong with America, all right? I'm teasing sort of, Jim. But the problem is, we're joking, but Jim didn't think that way. Probably most of you didn't think that way. I don't think that way because we get so used to certain things. You're used to padded pews and environmentally controlled room. You're used to these things. I want you to know it's not this way all over the world. It's not this way all over North America. And I just want to say thank you for how you give because you give to make this happen in places it normally would not. It's just not like it is here. The majority of our network of families we call Southern Baptist, in that network that we call, it's predominantly 85 to 90% is in the South. 85% are in the ACC or SEC. It's the other conferences that are going to hell, and we've got to reach them, all right? So I often jokingly say that, but if you look at a map of North America, the majority of evangelicals are in the South. And sometimes we begin to think like it's everything like it is in Suwannee, but it is not. And so where we see often that doors are closed, God opens what man cannot open. It's just amazing. And because you, I just want to remind you, every Sunday that you're sitting here, as you sing the very first song, you're part of a family that's planting about 10 to 15 churches every Sunday on average. There's a church right now in Augusta, Maine, doing exactly what you're doing, and they're there because of you and how you faithfully you give. God has called us to go way beyond our walls. I want you to look in the Acts 18, and I'm going to read these two verses. And what happened is Paul had become discouraged. He'd become depleted. I wouldn't say necessarily depressed, but he was worn out. And he had been called to go to different places that had not gone so well. And it wouldn't have really been building that ideal of a resume, if you will. But he's on his way to Corinth, about over a 50-mile journey to Corinth, which is pretty tough in those days. You have a lot of time to think as you transition that far. And that's in the midst of that discouragement, that's when the Lord comes to Paul, it says in a vision or a dream, and shares something with him in verse 9 and 10. At Paul's most depleted moment, depressed moment, the Lord comes with a word of encouragement. I want to ask you three simple little gimme questions, all right? What's the most important thing? You've been talking about that in your series. What's the most important? What's the most important thing that's ever happened to you? The most important thing that's ever happened to you. The easy answer to that would be when you came to know Christ in a personal way and that relationship began. If that's the most important thing that ever happened to you, what's the most important thing that you could ever do for someone else? Well, the obvious conclusion, if the most important thing that ever happened to you is to know Christ, the most important thing you could ever do to someone else is to share with them what the most important thing has ever happened to you is, right? Third question. If that's the most important thing that happened to you, and that's the most important thing you could do for someone else is to share with them that. The third question is, what would it take to shut you up or shut you down? What would it take to get you not to do that? Well, see, the Apostle Paul had been called by God and was sent out by the church of Antioch. He was doing a good work, but had become very distressed and down. And now I want you to see the Lord comes to him, and I believe also comes to us. And in the midst of that discouragement and reminds us of something so important. Let's just put the verses up there. If you would, just freeze it up there and leave it up there for a second. Acts 18, 9 and 10. And the Lord said to Paul one night in a vision, "Do not be afraid, but go on speaking and do not be silent, for I am with you, and no one will attack you to harm you. For I have many in this city who are my people." Now, I want us to stop. We're going to leave the verse up there for a second. There's two things here that I want you to notice that the Lord tells Paul in his most discouraging time. He says, first of all, do not be afraid. Or basically, Paul, stop being afraid. Based on the way it's written, we know that Paul was afraid. And he's telling him, you can stop being afraid. There's an old Bob Newhart skit that some of you are my age or older would know. Bob Newhart, a comedian. If you Google it later, some of you younger ones, and look at Bob Newhart, Stop It. It's a real funny skit where he's pretending like he's a counselor, and this lady comes in, and she has a fear of being buried alive in a box. And he says, "Oh, I can fix that. It's no problem." And she said, "Oh, really? What can you do? And he said, "No, it's no problem. Stop it. Just stop it. Don't think that way. Stop it." All right, now you might say that's not a good counselor, but that was basically the point. You stop feeling that way. The Lord's telling Paul, you're afraid. Stop being afraid. Do not be afraid. The second thing he's saying is do not quit. Notice what he says. Do not be afraid, but go on speaking or keep on speaking and do not be silent. Paul, don't be afraid, and you keep on doing what you're doing. You do not stop speaking. Do not become silent. You do not be afraid, and you keep on speaking. Do not quit. In our own lives, many times, life has a way of throwing curveballs. You go back through your journey and you see how God directed certain things. But sometimes things happen that we don't understand, and we can easily get distracted. I just want to encourage you, in the midst of that journey, do not quit. Do not be afraid. I love the fact that the Lord tells Paul, do not be afraid and do not quit, but doesn't leave it there. He just says, do not be afraid, do not quit. And then he tells him why he doesn't have to be afraid and why he should never quit. Simply, he put right the very next words, for I am with you. Hey, would you want to just say that with me? You ready? Here we go. For I. There you go. Let's do it one more time. Make sure we get it down. For I am with you. For I am with you. For I am with you. I'm with you. I'll never leave you or forsake you. I am with you. If we could get those few words down, there's not one curveball that life throws us that we cannot walk through. There's not one difficulty we could walk that we would learn to never be afraid and to never quit, because I am with you. The assurance of knowing that He's with us. There's not one step we're going to take today He's not there. Not one tomorrow or next week or next month. Challenges may come, but He's always with us. That changes the way we live if we really, really believe that. I want to admit, I know most of you perhaps are Georgia fans. I just assume that, all right? And I'm from Kentucky, though. And so we don't really talk about sports much during football season. And then and after last week, we lost it. We're not really going to talk about basketball either, but typically, I'm got consumed with Kentucky sports so much that it caused a marital issue in my life, and my wife says I somewhat joke about that. She said, "Look, you've got to get a grip on this. When you watch the games, you actually think you're there. I mean, when you lose a bit of your testimony in front of your kids or your grandkids. You've got to get it under control." And she was really right. I would get so consumed. I mean, I just couldn't stand it. You don't want to get in there and let them know my input, you know? And so I started doing something about 8 to 10 years ago that's really made a drastic change in my life and really helped. And I just want to encourage you, if you happen to be a sports addict, today there is hope, okay? What I do is I tape all the games. All the games. You say, "Well, that's no big deal." I do too. Well, normally when you tape a game, you tape it and you say, "Don't tell me the score. I'm going to watch it later." That's not how I do it. I tape the game. I find out the score. That's right. And then if we win, I watch it. Yeah. And if we lose, I delete it. So if you were to come to my home, which is just about 12, 15 miles from here, and I could pull up that saved, and all the wins are there. We can watch any of them. And a matter of fact, not messing with you, Jim, here, I'm serious. One of my favorite ones is when Kentucky played Michigan several years ago in the tournament. All right? Now, what I love about that particular game is, this is several years ago, we were down by 14 points in the first half. Ooh. Well, I'm nervous. No. Why? Because I knew the score. Why would I be nervous? There's no tension. There's no anxiety. There's no stress. We're down 14. No big deal. I'm watching halftime. The commentators are talking about, "I can't believe Kentucky's going to go down and how bad they're playing. And there's perhaps no way they could ever come back from a lead this large." Am I nervous? No, I know the score. Midway through the second half, we get it down to 8. Tension? None. I'm at the refrigerator getting something to drink and making another peanut butter and jelly. All right? We get down to 5 minutes to go. We're 8 down, and about three minutes to go. We're about 5 points down, and I'll never forget one, because I've watched it about 32 times. 1 minute to go. We're 2 points down. They have the ball. 55 seconds. 50 seconds. They have the ball, and they're up 2. Am I nervous? Perhaps should be. Not at all. Gets down to 30. We steal the ball. Happens every time. We come down 20 seconds, 15, 10. I'm on word, they call a timeout. They don't know what they're going to do. No, I know what they're going to do. They throw the ball in 10, gets down to 3, 2. They throw it in the corner to a guy named Aaron Harrison. And from a three-pointer, he throws it up. The buzzer sounds. Bah. Do I even watch? I don't have to because I know it goes in and we win. Now, that sounds silly, but the beautiful thing about that is that entire time through ups and through downs of the game, man, I was completely at peace because I knew we won. Now, it sounds silly, but I'm telling you, that's exactly what the Lord is referring to here to Paul. Look, Paul, I got this. I am with you. I'm with you. There's not one thing you're going to go through. I'm not there. I know tomorrow. I've got this, Paul. There's no need to have the discouragement, the despair of what I'm going to do. There's nothing's going to surprise me. And I'm going to walk you through it. You're going to adjust it. It's going to be fine. Do not be afraid. Do not quit, for I am with you. Then I wanted you to notice the next part of that, where he says, and no one will attack you to harm you. Basically, there's nothing that's not sifted through my hands, for I have many in this city who are my people. Think about that. For I have many in this city who are my people. The Lord tells Paul, I have many in this city who are my people. And what he's implying there is, Paul, I have many in this city who are my people that you know not of. You don't know them yet. I'm going to use you, Paul, to do things that you never dreamed. I have many people in this city who are my people that you know nothing about. Paul, trust me. I'm with you, but also your tomorrows, they're with me as well. I have much more I want to do with you. I just want to encourage you as a church. I know you've been faithful in the past. And sometimes we're real tempted to focus on the past. And sometimes people are overly focused to focus on the present. But I want you to see with great anticipation and expectation of what God is going to do through you. You see, talk about often we go on mission trips in the fall or mission trips in the spring or maybe a summer mission trip. But if you read the scripture, every day is a mission trip. The whole idea is for every one of us to be on mission where we are. It's not about what happens on the inside of this building. It's about what happens on the outside. You see, sometimes people look at churches and they want to define success of what happens in a church. They'll say, how big is it? And how big is their budget? How big is their staff? How big is their, and they want to talk about how big. You see, I really believe when we get to heaven, it's not going to be about our seating capacity. It's going to be about our sending capacity. If you go back and read the book of Acts, you know, Antioch, it says they sent them out. They sent Paul and Barnabas, they sent their very best, sent them out. I just want to encourage you, do not be afraid. Do not quit. Understand that he's with us and that there's much, much more that he's going to do through you. But I want to encourage you, don't think of it collectively. Think of it personally. Gypsy Smith was an evangelist years ago, and someone asked him, how do you start revival? And he says, oh, it's real simple. Simple? Oh, yeah. He said, you get a piece of chalk, a piece of chalk, a piece of chalk. You get a piece of chalk, and you go into a room all by yourself. And you draw a circle on the floor and then get down on your knees in that circle and pray that God would start a revival in that circle. What he's saying is, it's about you. When you talk about what is the best, I mean, think about you being on mission. God planted you here to do more than draw a breath and draw a salary. More than just to take care of your family. and kind of rope-a-dope it through life. There's a guy I never met, but his name's Bill. Bill was a phone installer back when they had phone installers. But Bill lived his life like it was on mission. And even though he was a phone installer, thought, you know, I'm going to do that and do that as my mission field. I'm going to use every opportunity I can to share my faith. And Bill did that. This one particular day he shared with a young couple. And the husband actually was interested. And although the husband, he had grown up beside a church, lived literally right beside a church for years, but they never ever invited him. He always had somewhat of an interest, but never really followed the Lord. And so Bill shared with him, come to find out, the guy accepts Christ. And his wife, he and his wife follow the Lord. They go and are baptized in this particular church. And everything changed for that young couple. What they did on Sundays changed. What they did on weekends changed. Everything about that, they radically changed. They had three kids, and I knew it radically changed in their life because I was their oldest son. And I was about 5 years old when I got to see my mom and dad baptized, and I'm so thankful for a guy named Bill that I've never, ever met. My point is, Bill never met me either. And Bill had no idea that, and he's going to share with this couple, and then that's going to impact their three kids, and then that's going to impact my six kids, and then my six grandkids, and then who are they going to impact? You never underestimate what one touch, what $1 given to allow a cascade of things to happen. And God may use you this day. Do something significant. You have no idea. To you, it may be not that big of a deal. And I'm sure Bill was not that big of a deal. He just naturally was being obedient to the Lord, shared, and has no idea. But I'm indebted to him because of his faithfulness. And God has called us to be obedient. There are going to be things that come that are going to make us afraid. He says, do not be afraid. Do not quit. You do not quit speaking. You keep on speaking, for I am with you. I was in Cuba not long ago, and Cuba is one of the gray areas where the International Mission Board and the North American Mission Board kind of have an overlap a bit. Let me explain it this way. In Cuba, the majority of the Baptist churches in Cuba, the deeds to those properties are in the vault at the North American Mission Board. There was a lady years ago named Annie Armstrong that went around and actually bought up properties. One was a theater in downtown Havana that they turned into a church called Calvary Church. It's the home of the largest Baptist church there in Cuba. And when Castro took over several years ago, the last time I was there, Castro was still alive and in power. And we go there just to remind those pastors, if you ever want these deeds, you can have them. But they wanted us to keep them in our vault because they're afraid if they had them, that Castro would take them away from him. So we were always go back there just to reassure them. And it was interesting when I was talking to those pastors and I said, well, tell me about what God's doing here. And this one particular Cuban pastor would begin to share with tears in his eyes and said, God has started a church planting movement in Cuba. And I said, well, tell me about it. He says, it's amazing. He said, Castro, when he took over, said, no more churches, no more churches. It's the best Castro I can do. And what he meant was you can't build anything. You can't build any more buildings. You can't build anything onto a church. You can't build a bathroom onto a church. What you have is what you get. But you can have Bible studies in your home. He didn't say Bible study. You can meet in your homes. And so they had what they had. They would fill it to capacity, and then they were forced to go into their homes. Then he came out with an edict, and his purpose was to dilute them, to spread them out so they would go away. And he says, all right, no more than 50. Like, do what? He says, no more than 50. You can meet in your homes, but no more than 50. When you get to 50, you have to go to somebody else's home and start another one. Of course, he's thinking, I'll spread these people out. That didn't work. that mandatory 50, when you get to 50, you have to go somewhere else, that meant they began to spread like wildfire. So it infuriated him, and he says, all right, no more, no more, no more. When you get to 30, when you get to 30, you have to go to someone. He kept thinking, I'll keep spreading them out. That'll do it. I'll spread them out. And this pastor with tears in his eyes says, God has started a church planting movement in Cuba. And he used a communist leader to do it. And his point was, we would have never gone on our own if he had not forced us because of the intimacy and the sense of community of a group. He said, because we were forced to, it spread like mad. I've often told people, if God ever allows me to pastor again, if he ever allows me to pastor again, I was going to hire Castro to be my education minister. Because it'd take a communist leader to get some groups to multiply. You know what I mean? No, we will not be moved. You know, when I was pastor, I had a lady said, we made the curtains for this room and we're going to stay here until we die. You know, I was like, yeah, I bet you do. And but my point is simply this. I mean, God has called you to be on mission. We must never quit. And we must do everything we possibly can to get it done. One of my favorite stories is in Mark chapter 2. Mark chapter 2, when these four guys bring a paralytic to where Jesus is, and they can't get him in because the place is jam-packed. Do you remember the story? The place is jam-packed. They can't get in there, so they take him up to the roof, and they dig a hole in the roof, and they lower him down to where Jesus is. And there in Mark 2 it says, and Jesus, seeing their faith, decided to heal him. You know what I love about that story is the tenaciousness of those guys. We don't know their names, but we know their heart is whatever it takes, we're going to get our friend to Jesus. You're talking about some guys who were inconvenienced to go and pick up their friend, take him to where Jesus is, and they wouldn't take no for an answer. They were going to do everything possible. To me, I see that when I look at the book of Acts and the importance of getting the word out. My word, we live in such a time where who would have dreamed that from a phone you can send a word of encouragement to a missionary? Who would have believed that from your phone you can contribute money to help your church send people all over the world? Man, we live in such an incredible opportunity. We've got to make the very most of it. He's called us to be faithful and obedient. J.M., when we went to pick up J.M., and he took that shower, I'll never forget one of the very last things that happened there. I put him to bed. Can you imagine, 12 years old, adjusting to a new family? And I've tucked him in, and he sat up, and he hugged me really, really tight. He's always, still is, a really tight hugger. And he said, I love you, Dad. That's the first time I'd ever heard him say that. And I said, well, I love you too, buddy. And then he did something really awkward. He took his little fist, and he gripped him like this, and he pushed it on my cheeks like this. Really tight. Really tight. And one time I'm thinking, you know, I'm not sure exactly, I didn't know what to say or do. I actually started thinking, man, I should have listened during the orientation, you know? It's like, is this some type of Filipino custom? Like, good night, you know? It's like, what is this? And so he pushed a little harder, and I realized he just wanted me to focus on his eyes, and so I looked him straight in the eyes, big brown eyes. I said, what's wrong, buddy? And then he said something I'll never forget. I tell a story all the time. He said, I will be a good son for you. And I just remember how it pricked my heart the first time. I was thinking, my word, I'll be a good dad for you. I promise. And you go to bed. I remember laying in my bed thinking, oh my gosh, you know what? He'd be a good son for me. A little did I know he lied, but that's what it is. Went to bed the next morning, 4 a.m. He's right here. Good morning, Dad. I'm like, whoa, hey. Hey. He said, I'll be a good son for you today. And I was like, well, good. I want you going back to bed, all right? I mean, it's incredible. You say 4 in the morning, and 4 in the morning, the kids in that orphanage, they get up at 4, they do chores from 4 to 5, breakfast from 5 to 5:30, and they go to school at 6. I mean, it's incredible. What time did you get up, Jim? You see, yeah, just woke up. problem with America, right there. All right. But, and in this case, you're open to adoption, just so you know, all the kids we adopted came very disciplined. They really did. But don't let that alarm you. Within just a few months, the selfishness of your biological children wears off on them, and they become just like them. They really do. It's not a problem. So don't be concerned if you are. But that morning, same thing. That night, same thing. I'll be a good son for you. I'll be a good son for you. About 3 days in, I realized he's trying to tell me he's going to earn being in the family long term here. And so I wanted to straighten it out. So I said, look, JM, you need to understand something, buddy. You're part of our family forever. You're part of our, as I teach you to say, forever family. Forever family. You're part of our family forever. Good or bad, we prefer good. But either way, you're part of our family forever. It's not about earning it. A beautiful picture of our salvation. It's by God's grace, through faith, not of works, lest any man should boast. I know that. But James does say, when you do have faith in Christ, then you are going to be obedient. There's a big difference. I couldn't help but think that night, what it would be like if every person in every church would wake up every morning or go to bed every night saying the same thing but to our Heavenly Father. Today, I'm going to be a good son for you. I'm going to be obedient to you. I'm going to be a good daughter for you. Today, I'm going, it's all, everything about today is about you. That's what it's about. I'm thankful we're saved by the grace of God. But I'm also thankful that we have the opportunity every day to live on mission. And to spend our time focused on the very best things. And I want to ask you, if you were to draw your circle and get down on your knees in that circle, what would it be that God would say that you need to do today to stretch your faith? One thing he's telling us, whatever you do, do not fear. I got you covered. You do not quit. Keep on speaking. Do not be silent. Do not grow weary. I know you're tired, but you never retire from being on mission for me. For I'm with you. Right? At times it may look like you're behind. You're behind at halftime, it's not a problem. Minute to go, late in life, challenge, things aren't happening like you thought they would. I got this. I am with you. Don't think you're being very effective? Basically, you don't know how effective you are. Some of the most effective things you've ever done, you might not know anything about. And it's really not the importance of you know about them, it's that you're being obedient and leaving the rest to God. Father, thank you for how you love us and care for us and know everything about us and love us anyway. Father, I thank you that you've called us to be on mission. And may we be faithful to the task. And Lord, I thank you for this church, for how for years they have been so faithful. But Lord, may not only this church, but each one of us individually look expectantly and with great anticipation of all that you're going to do through us. Lord, help us to see that it's just really all about our faithfulness and obedience to you and leaving it all to you. Lord, help us to be mindful and aware of the opportunities you bring our way every day. Use us now. Draw us closer to yourself.